welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 242 of the podcast. And it is the 9th of November, 2015, as I record this on the very day it goes out. I'm a bit slack and I'm a bit late. I actually had a day off yesterday, a whole day off the internet. I do need to have more than one day at a time off. I have done that several times, like when I've gone to India and Croatia earlier this year, and it's super. But I remembered yesterday that a day off the internet is a good thing. So I'm intending to rededicate myself to doing that more often. But anyway, I am here. It's still Monday, so I'm not late with the show. So today I have an interview with Jay Thorne. It's actually more like a discussion as we talk through the co-writing process of Risen Gods. And Jay also shares his other collaboration experiences as he's done a lot of them and played different parts in each. So I kind of interview him, but also share my own experience of co-writing with Jay. And if you're at all interested in co-writing, collaboration, co-creation, it will be super useful. And it is quite long, as we decided to just go into a lot of detail, and then we're using the transcript as the basis to another co-written book on co-writing, which is very meta. The book on co-writing will be out in December 2015, so depending on when you're listening, it might already be out. I'm putting info at thecreativepen.com/co-writing if you're interested in that book, or it will be on all the stores as usual. Now, on Risen Gods, our co-written dark fantasy thriller, I did the changes this week based on the pro edit by Jen Blood, my editor, and it's currently with beta readers, and Jay and I will be emailing our advanced reader teams in the next couple of weeks, and it'll be out for everyone on, I'm thinking now, the 30th of November, which is the Monday, so I can announce it on the show. And depending on when you're listening again, it will be at jfpen.com/risengods. So in publishing news this week, Amazon opened a physical bookstore in Seattle. And of course, when most companies open a bookstore, there is not the global media interest as there is when Amazon does. And is this going back to print? Is it a sort of print wins type of thing? No, it's not. The question is it a Christmas gimmick? I don't know. It will depend on whether it makes money, I suppose. And if it does make money, will they buy up Barnes & Noble space? Will they buy up independent bookstores? I don't know. It's interesting. I mean, the Apple Store is a good example of somewhere that has become a destination. You know, certainly everybody, well, I'm an Apple person and I like going into the Apple store and looking at stuff, and you know, it's nice. Even though you can buy everything online, it's still nice to go into the store. So it'll be interesting to see what Amazon does with that, or whether they'll have a little CreateSpace plant doing print on demand out the back or something. I don't know. It will also be interesting whether they follow the merchandising model of most physical bookstores. I'm sure you all know that if you walk into a bookstore, publishers have paid for the front space and often paid for the bestseller list. It always makes me laugh in Britain. You know, you go into WH Smith's and those spots are paid for. They're not true bestsellers as such. They almost become a bestseller after the spot has been paid for. So it's a really interesting model, the physical bookstore, and how they make their money. So it will be, we'll see what happens. I'm going to sit on the fence at the moment and not really have an opinion on whether it's good or bad. It's interesting. How's that? So it's continued to be a busy time. I really have overbooked my diary. You know, I talk about productivity and managing your time, but sometimes I push just a little bit too far into the overwhelm space, which is, I have been on the edge of that for a while, but I am going to a whole load of really interesting stuff. So last week I went to an event with Seth Godin, who, if you If you haven't heard of him, he's like a marketing guy, but more than that, much more than that, a leader in the online space, I think. I've been following him online for years. His book, Tribes, was instrumental in thinking about this site. His book, Permission Marketing, sort of was the forerunner of email lists and really his ideas around authentic marketing, being yourself, sharing interesting stuff. His books Lynchpin and Icarus Deception are excellent as well if you're not quite clear on your space in things or your place in the world. But the event was really interesting. I have a blog post stirring on it once I've let all the thoughts settle. But basically, he does believe the industrial age is well and truly over, but he talks about the factory mindset needing another 10 years to shift. And we see that. I mean, we're still in our education system teaching kids to be cogs in factory type situations, but that's not the reality that you and I are living in anymore. We know we have to create and build in order to make a living in this kind of new future when, outsourcing will be hyper. So yeah, I see this as a positive thing. And Seth also talked about his own model of choosing to say no to the boring stuff. So for example, when he did Permission Marketing and it became a international bestseller, you know, he was approached and said, look, why don't you do the Permission Marketing Handbook, the Permission Marketing for Accountants? You know, you could charge loads of money for a speaking career on Permission Marketing. And Seth said, no, that's not what I want to do. I want to do the next interesting project, even if that fails. I choose interesting projects and interesting people. And that really resonated with me, and which is why this podcast doesn't go over and over the same material. I'm pretty much following my own interest, and hopefully that keeps it interesting for you. You know, this is things are changing all the time. So yeah, anyway. And also Seth is an example of someone who has just consistently delivered for years. I mean, he's blogged every day, sometimes short, sometimes long, but he's consistently put his thoughts out there. He also talked about, you know, writing 6 or 7 things every day and then choosing one of them. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. But when you've been blogging every day for, I think it's 10 years, you know, people remember your hits. And he's built a huge audience that way and can go direct to the audience for new projects. So I helped fund his last book on Kickstarter just by him putting a link on his blog. And his example is one that I follow. And obviously, in a way, it's working because, I'm able to make a living thanks to you guys buying my books, my products, supporting on Patreon, that type of thing. Seth also doesn't get swayed by fads, and this was such a relief to hear from him. He just keeps creating, and you know, he does his own marketing. Obviously, he blogs every day, he puts out content marketing, but he doesn't jump on the latest thing. And mostly that's what I've done for the last 7 years. I've been blogging, podcasting, writing books since December 2008. So it's what I will continue to do because I see Seth and I see others like him who've been in this space for that long. And, you know, after 10 years, it's pretty incredible what they have achieved. And another example of one of these people I've been following for years is Brian Clark at copyblogger.com. And certainly I learned about headline writing, about copywriting, about, authenticity in content marketing from Copyblogger. And I'm really super thrilled, like amazingly thrilled, that I will be speaking at Copybloggers Conference, the Digital Commerce Summit in October 2016 in Denver, Colorado. And I'll be speaking about ebooks and how people can use ebooks as a business. And I'll also be there for the whole summit. So if you are interested in Digital Commerce Summit, check it out at digitalcommerce.com. This feels like a really big milestone for me. I've wanted to be speaking more in the US. I also, like I said, I've been a fan of Copyblogger for so long, so it's very cool. I'll also be in Austin, Texas at the end of March for the Sterling and Stone Story Summit with the boys from the Self-Publishing Podcast. The first time I will be meeting them in person, which is very cool. So yes, two trips to the US and probably not Thriller Fest next year because two trips is enough. Okay, moving on to here's what you've sent me this week. Yatia sent me some beautiful orchid pictures and said, enjoying your most recent podcast, Pros and Cons of Indie versus Trad Pub, while preparing an orchid for the purpose of mounting to my tree. Very lovely, Yatia. Jessie K said, caught up with your last four shows while proofing my latest book, English Masala, English from India, which sounds very cool, as well as nursing my two-day-old daughter, Josephine, in the neonatal ICU at Bath Hospital. Probably not far from you. Hi, Jessie, and all the best to Josephine, little Josephine, and thank you for sharing. Also, Jessie said, you mentioned on your last show about the intros. For me, listening to your news and updates is an essential part of the show. On occasion, it is the only bit I listen to. Which is quite cool. Thanks, Jessie. Trudy K is back at the dentist. And after the last picture she sent from the dentist, she asked the dentists to pose. And there's a brilliant, happy picture at the dentist with the lovely, lovely dentist and dental assistant posing with their instruments. And even though I'm not really massively fond of the dentist, I mean, who is? It makes your dentist look like the best one in the world, Trudy. So hope that was all right. Carlina Angwin says, inspired by the interview with Monica Lionel, I tried dictation for NaNoWriMo and did three times my daily word count. That's awesome. I must say, you know, even though I'm still talking about it, because I'm in editing, I'm not in first draft, so I'm not dictating yet, but I've got a short story that I want to write for a competition with Stephen King and The Guardian. That's open to UK authors if anyone's interested. And that short story, I want to do the first draft with dictation. So I'll talk about that. So that's first draft writing, which is coming up soon, hopefully, because boy, editing gets annoying, doesn't it? Kate Harrison says, on Rain Trail Train to self-publishing conference featuring at the Creative Pen, listening to her podcast, there's fandom for you. Kate, thank you so much. And yes, Kate and I both spoke this last weekend at a conference in London. And Kate, I'm sorry I didn't have any much time to say hi. I'm glad at least we said hello. But yeah, that was pretty crazy conference. I only got 30 minutes to speak, which for me is it's not very long. Lex Duncan says, most of my motivation to get all my schoolwork done in a reasonable hour so I can edit came from the Creative Pen podcast. I'm glad to help, Lex. Oh, this was a good one. WN Crod. And WN, you need to make your Twitter profile more detailed because WN sent this intriguing picture of himself standing in front of what looks like a huge freezer with dry ice and a safety helmet and safety glasses on. And he looks a bit like a sort of handyman superhero and says, I listen while helping enable our customers to make the world healthier, cleaner and safer. And I am intrigued as to what you do, WN. So let me know. Dadstruction says, listening while scanning mum's clippings and discovering her obsession with the local roundabout, which is a really odd, and sent a picture of some clippings. Aren't clippings interesting? Like, you know, physical bits of newspaper, because this is something now that's gone. I mean, will anybody sit and go through an Evernote archive? I don't think so. And I was going to say, Dadstruction, check out Swindon's Magic Roundabout sometime. Now, there's one of the most interesting roundabouts in the whole world. Joe Dawid, or David, if you're Welsh. I think you're American, Joe, but that would be a good Welsh name. Listening while making mini apple pies. Yum, yum. These will be the last of the pies. I've had enough of rolling pie crust. Mel listening while walking the dogs. Very shaggy dogs from the picture. And Brittany Fichter, enjoying your podcast and an autumn walk with the baby, came across this ugly fellow. Picture of a snake in the road. Now, I actually love snakes. So I would say that I particularly like the picture of the snake. Feel free to send me pictures of snakes, people. I actually have a mulga wood snake here on my shelf next to my desk from Uluru in Australia, where I had a bit of a spiritual experience with snakes. They're kind of like my totem animal. So yeah, definitely like snakes. Monica Rodriguez says, love dragon for first draft. Very accurate, even with my New York accent. Vinegar and Vanilla. One podcast can shift your entire creative energy. Thank you for listening. Okay, so what are you doing while listening to the show, or has a particular podcast spurred you into action? And apologies if I miss anyone. They're coming in thick and fast now. And obviously sharing a picture will always make you stand out in my Twitter stream. Please do tweet me at The Creative Pen, or you can email me joanna@thecreativepen.com. Okay, so today's podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for your free power pack upgrade worth $99. Now, obviously, 99 Designs is super duper for book covers, and we all need book cover designs. I still think that possibly 0.00001% of authors should do their own book covers. So you can basically, what you do on 99 Designs is you put up your contest. So you create a new contest and you put up your requirements. So you might say a cover for the front of a dark fantasy novel, and then put a whole load of stuff for the designers, so they know approximately what you're thinking about. For example, I would include examples of covers that I like, a bit about the blurb, some about the colors that you like, stuff like that. And then also say what you want in terms of, for example, if you get a book cover, always ask for a 3D image as well as a flat image, because it's just really good to use for online stuff. Then you specify, you have a time period, and people add all of their covers, and you get to have a shortlist. And this is really super fun. I really enjoy this. What's great about 99 Designs is you get so many different designers. So if you're not set on working with a single designer yet, this can be a really good way to find one. So once you do a shortlist, you can do a poll and send a link out to your readers and get them voting on which is the best cover. This can be interesting because sometimes your readers vote for things that you don't necessarily like, but that's quite fun. Recently, Jay Thorne and I did a 99 Designs for a map for the front of Risen Gods, and it's super. And we did a vote. I liked both of the images, and the poll made it very clear which one was going to win, and we chose that. So basically, if you use that power pack upgrade, again at 99designs.com/Joanna, you'll get more designers, because you'll get a bolded header and you'll get lots of different things that help your competition stand out. And once you have a design that you like, that's when you pay. So there's no risk. If you don't like it, you don't pay. You can get book covers, maps, illustrations. You can get web page design, social media banners, headers, posters, postcards, flyers, email, newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs, and so much more. Okay, so very exciting. And again, 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, for your power pack upgrade. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons Helen Wilkie, Courtney Kenny, Patches Chance, Robert Lee, and JC Henry. We also hit the milestone where I promise an extra Q&A show per month, and all Patreon supporters will get that monthly with a link to the audio and also the form for questions to submit to me. So check your Patreon account for that, or email me if there's an issue, joanna@thecreativepen.com. And as ever, I really appreciate the Patreon support, like the tweets and the emails. It really makes me feel that we have a viable show now, and that people want it to continue, and as do I. On Patreon, you can support me with just a few dollars, even just $1 a show, to a maximum of 2 shows a month, less than a coffee a month. And now you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And that's pen with a double N. Okay, let's get on with the discussion/interview with Jay Thorne. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Jay Thorne. Hi Jay.
Hello, Joanna.
Hello again. Just a little introduction. Jay is a best-selling horror writer and creator of Dark Arts Theatre and the Horror Writers Podcast. Jay is also my co-author for Risen Gods, a dark fantasy slash supernatural thriller. And depending on when you're listening, it's either out in pre-order or it will be for sale from the 1st of December 2015. So very exciting. And today we are talking about co-writing. And just so everybody knows, this is the first time Jay and I have spoken since we started writing, isn't it?
That is true. Absolutely true.
So we're going to, you know, because we trust each other, we trust the audience, we're going to have a no holds barred discussion today and share the nitty gritty of co-writing, because I think it's something that many people are interested in doing. So Jay, before we get into our experience, just tell everyone a bit more about the different projects that you've done with co-writing so far.
Sure. I really started with marketing collaborations more so than creative collaborations. Glenn James and I, another UK author, we put together a series of box sets called This Is the End. And that was my first taste with collaborating. I was sort of in charge of getting all the materials together and getting those things published and dealing with royalty disbursements and all the stuff that goes along with managing a multi-author box set. And as I was in that, I started thinking, like, well, this is really cool, but it would be much more fulfilling to do a creative collaboration, something instead of taking sort of these siloed pieces of art and putting them together, which is great, and it's still great. I thought, I want to co-create. And I'm usually not smart enough to figure this stuff out ahead of time, so I figured, well, okay, I've never co-written before. I'll start with a 10-author collaboration. I mean, of course, that makes perfect sense. It wasn't quite like that, I'm being facetious, but really what happened was I had this idea for a story, and I wanted it to be a full novel that was co-written, but it was not an anthology. I didn't want a collection of short stories. And so I reached out to many authors and ended up fooling 9 of them into writing with me. And that became the Black Fang Betrayal. And my role in that collaboration, as David Moody called it, was sort of the, it was an orchestra, and I was conducting. And so I was sort of, I had the whole story arc in mind. I wrote the beginning and I wrote the end, and then I gave each author their piece to write. And they had a somewhat specific outcome, but they had a lot of freedom within that to kind of tell the story however they wanted. And I really, really loved that. And I felt like the product was way better than something I could have made on my own. I mean, I had the story. I could have written the whole story myself. But having those different input, and I didn't realize it at the time, again, because I kind of bluster into things and I don't think a lot about them, and I probably should. It should have been a disaster. Like, on paper, it should not work. I mean, you think about trying to, like, unify voices and tone and just coherency of plot arc and all of that kind of stuff. It just worked. And there were very few plot holes. There were very few issues of one character doing one thing and then someone else having that character do something completely different. It just worked. So really, that was pretty exciting. And leading up to that, I had Sean Platt write me some story beats, and I wrote a short story called Lost Track, which is in the world of The Beam that Sean and Johnny write. And so I got a sense of what it felt like to sort of be the follower or sort of be led by a certain story structure. So I applied that for The Black Fang, and then after The Black Fang, I thought, okay, now if I've done this with 10 authors, doing it with one other person should be super easy. So I did Shadow Witch with Dan Padovana, which came out in the spring. We call it Game of Thrones meets Blair Witch. And in that configuration, Dan and I kind of came up with story beats together. And I put together a rough outline. And then he wrote the whole first draft, and I did all of the revisions. And that was how that collaboration worked. And then most recently, with you and with Glenn James and I are writing a 9-book series, and we're just beginning book 3 of the first draft. We're not going to release anything until we have at least 3 books, most likely. And in my collaboration with him and with you, it's been more of a A-B-A-B process. So we have sort of some story beats or a loose outline, We each write scenes. They're not necessarily linear, but we each take a turn writing every day. We're both first drafting. And then I have one in pre-production with Zach Bohannon, and we're going to write something together. We haven't quite figured out what that configuration is going to be yet. So I guess what I'm saying is I've kind of tried it in a number of different ways. Well, yeah, I've done it with many people in many different ways, and that probably doesn't sound so great, but...
You're such a pro at this. So are you writing anything on your own anymore? I mean, do you plan, because that's a lot of books.
It is. And I have a standalone, a book one in a new series I've been working on for about 2.5 years, which is really unlike me. I plow through the process. I like to get books to market fast. I like the story to be fresh. But this particular one, for whatever reason, is taking me longer. And I have it sitting on my desk. It came back from my editor. I'm probably only 2 or 3 weeks away from publishing it, but I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with it. And it stood on the SPP where somebody asked, David may have asked Johnny about, you know, would you ever write yourself again? And Johnny was kind of like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of in that weird spot. Like, I will always write my own stuff and I will continue to do that. But the more collaborating I do, I find that it's a ton of fun, and the story always seems to come out better than it would if I had tried it on my own. So right now, yeah, I'm going to keep writing stuff. I got that one project I'm working on, but this whole collaborating thing is completely unexpected. I mean, I'm an introvert like you. I don't like people. I don't like talking to people. I don't like looking at people. No, kidding. It kind of goes against my nature, I guess, in a way. So here I am now. I'm sitting in this space where I've done all these different collaborations, and I really enjoy it. And I find that the end product is really great. So just going to keep doing it.
And okay, so let's talk about the. There's so many things, and I have got a list.
I know you do.
Let's start with you mentioned some of them there, but what are the pros and cons of co-writing? And this is more of a discussion, so I'm going to start because I've only done the one and we're in editing stage right now. But to me, like, the biggest thing that makes it addictive is that we finished a first draft of a novel in, what was it, 2.5 weeks or 3.5 weeks? Like, it was
19 days.
Yeah.
Total.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy. And it's like, okay, that's addictive. I can see that the pace when you divide it by two is incredible. And the second thing to me was accountability, in that we agreed to write 5 days a week. And because I'm in England, 5 hours ahead of you, I write in the morning. So I would get up, I would do my words, and then we have a spreadsheet, and we'll come to the practicalities, but I would put my words in, and then you would get up, and then you would know. I had one day where I was sick. But, you know, other than that, the accountability of knowing that you were going to get up, and that if I hadn't done my writing, I would feel like an idiot, you know, and that I wasn't pulling my weight. So that that accountability to me was amazing, because I'm terrible at accountability to myself. But knowing I had to, you know, not please you, but, you know, I had to do stuff because you would be waiting. That really made a difference to me. So those are two big things for me. Like, what about you? What are some of the positives around collaboration?
Well, yeah, definitely the accountability piece. And I explain it to people. I don't go to the gym anymore, and I should, because I'm getting to that point in my life where things are starting to bulge out around the middle. You know, I got to work that off in the gym. But it's that idea of having a workout partner. Mm-hmm. And it is that accountability. And it's I felt the same pressure. And I know, because I was coming in after you, I had more of the, like, I had the whole day, because I knew you weren't going to come back to it until the next morning. But even still, like, I felt pressure, and I probably wrote on days where if it were me, I would have just said, I'll pick it up tomorrow. And sometimes it's okay, but I think you really kind of pushed in a way that was positive, in that I felt like, yeah, this is a fast-paced story. We got to get it out this way, and the reader will feel that. And so that sort of accountability felt really good to me. Like, I felt... And the other thing that was really cool about that, and I think we've been experiencing it, is you've been looking at different map designs for the book. There's a certain level of excitement that that you can share with someone that even your spouse doesn't get.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Charity
like
doesn't get.
You know, my wife doesn't care about my books anymore. She's like, whatever. I don't
yeah,
care what
it's
you
another
can,
book.
Right? Yeah, right. Whatever. But like when you're co-creating and it's just the two of you and you feel the ownership of that, it's so exciting and so much fun. So I would say it's the accountability and fun. That's what's really in it for me. And both of those I find addictive as well.
Yeah. And I think for me, this was actually what I've really learned, a really massive thing that's going to help me so much is the outlining. I mean, I did, you know, in this collaboration, it was my kind of story idea, wasn't it, originally? And
yes.
I did the outline. And it's a story I've had for ages. You know, when I lived in New Zealand, I've had these ideas for years about volcanoes in New Zealand and Maori gods and everything. And I wanted to write this story. It's standalone and it seemed like a good thing to try. And when I was doing that, you know, just the outline, there weren't beats at all. Like it was an outline, wasn't it? It was about 2 pages of which we used the Story Grid and Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. And I made this 2-pager and that was pretty much all we had, wasn't it? And
yes.
Then at a couple of points, I said, okay, here's the couple of scenes coming up or you should write this next. But what I've learned is that that's not enough. And the outlining, if we were going to do this again, or if I was going to do it with somebody else, like that outline to me, like the beats you did with Sean, that is critical. And now I want to do that for my own writing because, you know, what I've ended up with in the editing is going through it going, oh, you know, if I'd have known that earlier, we could have avoided some wasted words as such. Not that any words are wasted, but you know what I mean. So
yes.
That's something I really learned. Is that something what have you learned from this process or all of your collaborations?
Well, I also, I'm a huge fan of Coyne's Story Grid, and I discovered him on your podcast, and I bought the book, and it's, other than Stephen King's On Writing, which I read, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, it's the best book on craft I've ever seen. And if you're a new author and you have a desire to write a novel, but you don't know where to begin, that's the only book you need, really. It's fantastic. And even though I read it and I internalized it and I mapped some of my own novel with it, the way you implemented it in Scrivener, for example, was awesome. I was kind of blown away. I had never thought about connecting all the different technical pieces of what Scrivener offers with sort of the craft piece from the Story Grid. So the thing that I'm going to take into my own writing now is really making sure every scene has at least one polarity shift. That you have a cliffhanger of some sorts, and they can vary in their level of drama, but having a conflict, internal and external, and just being very deliberate about noting that in my writing in some fashion. So, if you're writing in Word, maybe it's a comment in the margin or whatever. But that was a phenomenal learning experience for me, and something I'm going to bring into my own writing.
I'm really pleased about that. And maybe we can come back to mistakes and what we do differently. But that, in case people don't realize, that polarity shift is like, does it go from positive to negative or negative to double negative? And the interview with Sean Coyne was great about that. And the negation of the negation, which I just love. But it does really help. And what I learned is that I should have done that in the draft, in the outlining process. Mm. If we'd have done it then, it would have made it so much easier to do the scenes.
Yes.
So staying with the pros and cons, what are the negatives around co-writing, co-creating?
There's a lot. And I don't mean with you, Joanna. I mean
in
general.
Yeah, of course not.
I think, no, in all seriousness, I think if you struggle to compromise, or if you're an artist with a very specific vision, I think co-writing could be a challenge. And I know there, and it's not a judgment. I know there are authors who are like that. They say, you know what, I know exactly what's in my head. I'm going to get it out into paper. I have friends who, I mentioned co-writing and they're like, ooh, gross. Like I couldn't even, I don't want any part of that. That's a good thing to know about yourself. I don't think it's for everyone. And I think if you're going into a creative project with a very fixed idea of what the outcome is going to be, I think you'll be disappointed because it's not going to be that way. Even if you're the one in the lead, and I'd love to hear what you think about this since you sort of took the creative lead on this. Like, I don't think it's exactly what you think it's going to be in the beginning.
Yeah. I want to say that I didn't think I could do this. And I'm still struggling. And I absolutely admit to being a control freak, and I'm much more, and you very graciously, and I've written, you know, down here, you know, the fact that you're so relaxed as a person and somebody that I've never met physically, but, you know, we've talked for years now online and, you know, on Skype and things, the fact that you're so relaxed with me as a character, like there's absolutely no way I could co-write with someone who was like me. Because I realize I've been super controlling about this. Now, whether that's because it was my story idea and it's been in my head for years, and I lived in New Zealand for 7 years, and like the geography is so important, and there's things that you didn't know. I mean, you're writing right. about something you just don't know. But so I'm interested to, you know, ask you in, am I super controlling as a co-writer? Because you've worked with so many people, when you're in the driving seat, have you been controlling, for example?
I think in my own way I have. I think it, I know, yes, I know I may have this relaxing demeanor in front of you in Skype, but there are things that I'm kind of a stickler for, and there are certain things in co-writing that are sort of non-negotiables for me. And I think those, for me, they show up pretty early in the process. So one of the things that I'm pretty demanding on is any type of story beat that is co-authored, there has to be a payoff, a big payoff at the end of the book. And I like that in the form of a twist. I like a twist ending, even for horror and dark fantasy. I feel like it's got to be there. And so I've been in some co-writing situations and looked at some outlines, and it wasn't there. And I kind of pushed back and said, it's not going to do it for me. Like there has to be a payoff at the end. So I did not find working with you and your control freakery, as you call it. I didn't find that to be anything that would prohibit me from moving forward or doing this type of thing again. I think the moments where you were pretty clear and direct on what you wanted really helped. They, you know, and I appreciated that, because as you said, this is kind of a story you've had rolling around for years. I've never been in New Zealand, and so I had to sort of follow your lead on that. And I think that goes to, you know, talking about, and I know we'll probably get to this, about what makes a successful collaboration. And I think that compromise is really important. I think it's a psychological challenge. Like, you have to know when to assert yourself and when to pull back. And there's no manual for that. It's a lot of feel.
Yeah, which is really interesting. So, well, let's move into that then. How do you find somebody appropriate? Like, how do you know? Like, for me, it was, do you remember how we first started talking about this? Actually, I'm trying to think.
It's been a few years. I think when I was starting to do the box sets, we talked about some type of marketing collaboration. And I could tell that you were still not sold on the idea of a creative collaboration. So I just kind of wore you down, and I kind of come back every few months and like, hey, Joanna, how about that collaboration? I think it's different for every pairing, every collaboration. There's not sort of a recipe to follow, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's interesting because now I'm, you know, and I've said to you, you know, if we do it again, I would like to try following, in, you know, and do it around one of your stories, because I think that would be good for me, like to be, you know, it would be good for me to relax a bit. But I think what changed my mind on the whole thing was James Patterson's masterclass. Did you do that as well?
I have it on my list. I have a few courses kind of queued up, and I remember you saying that you took that course, and then it sort of convinced you that was the way
to
go.
It did. Yeah. And, you know, it was one thing he said, and he said, Lennon and McCartney. And of course, we're not Lennon and McCartney, but the point is that two, like you said, two creative minds can create something that's better than what you did on your own. And that's really a powerful thing. So for me, it was one, the decision to do it, and two, the fact that, seriously, out of all the authors I know, there is one other person I'm considering this with, but with you, it was like, just because you've done this before a number of times, and also because you've played the different roles, I thought that was really good. So, I was going to mention one of the negatives also around this is basically, you're tied to that person. for the long term. I mean, you know, we talk there about like your spouse or whatever, but when you, what happens with copyright is essentially we are joined with copyright once we publish this book. And the agreement we have is that, you know, we're 50-50 basically for the life of the book, which is the life, our lives and 70 years after we die.
It's worse than a marriage.
Well, it's pretty hardcore. So to me, the big negative is I have to, not with you, of course. I have to deal with this person basically forever now. And my estate has to, and there will be royalty dispersion, assuming we make money, which we will, forever. And that is a massive commitment as far as I'm concerned. Also, sharing, I mean, what's been interesting for me is you've very graciously given me the prime editing role, because I've been quite protective of this story and these characters because they have been in my head for longer. And that's really difficult too. And again, we've agreed that we jointly own this world. Trust issues around the writing, and you have to be pros and cons, I suppose. It's very good. I feel it's very good to have to trust more, but also the potential for go wrong. And we're going to come back to what if things go wrong. But in terms of, let's talk about level of writer. Mm-hmm. So there's no way I would, and I presume you wouldn't co-write with someone who'd never written a book. And probably you'd need, 3 to 5 books first?
Well, I think that's something I'm realizing, yes. I don't want to sound egotistical when I say this, but the truth is, if you haven't written probably 3 to 5 of your own books, you really haven't fully developed your own voice and your own style. And there are always exceptions to that, and there are great writers who have one book out. So I'm not saying you're not a great writer until you have 4 or 5 books, but your ability to then mingle your voice with another writer's voice is hard to do until yours is established. Mm-hmm. And so, we'll talk more about what goes wrong, but in truth, I have more failed collaborations than I do finished ones. And when I say failed, I mean ones that just didn't result in a publication or a product or work of art. There are, you know, various reasons and different ways that they either sputter out or they get shelved or temporarily sidetracked, but it's hard. And if you don't have a lot of experience in both the writing and the marketing side of things, it's easy to get hurt. It's easy to get yourself hurt. It's easy to internalize and personalize critique, difference of opinion. It's hard to look at your own writing objectively until you have established yourself and really taken some of the lumps. I mean, we've all gotten those 1-star reviews and we've learned from those. And I think you kind of have to run the gauntlet in a way before you're ready to kind of open up and co-create, because that's a whole nother level of challenge.
Yeah. And also you need, as a co-author, to trust that the other person is going to deliver something that works.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you have to trust that. Otherwise, the editing process will just be a nightmare. I mean, you have to understand point of view and setting and, you know, and with nonfiction too. I mean, you know, we're also doing a nonfiction book on how to co-write while co-writing. Just because
we are now.
Yes. This transcript will be the basis for that. But that, so I think it will be exactly the same. I mean, there are some of the similar things, but with fiction very particularly, I also think one of the important things is the author brand. So for me, with you, this isn't a horror book. This is dark fantasy. And for me, and you write we say horror, but you write dark fantasy too already.
Yeah, pretty much.
And
yeah,
you write supernatural. I know you're happy with demons. And that was like a big thing for me. I was like, I know Jay's happy with demons, you know, and that is, that was a big thing. So even though we're not writing horror, I mean, we're pretty much, I think we've both moved, haven't we? Would you say that you've moved? I mean, I know about the ending. You said I would not normally do an ending like this. Yeah. So how do you feel that how are you moving your author brand for this collaboration, basically?
Yeah, I don't know if I am really. I know, in Coyne's book, he talks about the thriller being sort of the 21st century mode of or genre that seems to be the most accessible to most people. And I know that you consider yourself a thriller author, and really horror is just sort of a variation on that. And so I don't feel like I moved a ton. The way I see it, I think I learned how to write a better horror story. Because there were elements in this book that were very thriller-esque and action adventure in a way that I haven't incorporated into horror books before, which I think will make my horror books even better. So, I think if people, and I've always marketed myself as myself, I've never really marketed my books. So I think if people like my writing, they're going to like this collaboration too.
Mm. And we should also say that you would generally only pick someone who has a similar level of platform. So as in, again, a new brand new writer doesn't have an email list, doesn't have a following, you know, doesn't have, enough readers. And that was part of our point, wasn't it, as well, is to share some readership.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. It's not that you can't do it, but you lose the leverage of amplifying two author platforms on the marketing side. So we're both going to come out of the gate, and we're gonna leverage everything that we've built individually towards this single goal, and it's really going to be way more than we could do on our own. And so it's not that you couldn't write it with someone who doesn't have an established platform, but you just wouldn't get the same impact.
Yeah, so I think that's important to consider. And also just even that you can have conversations that imply you both know what you're doing around writing and marketing. And, you know, I don't have to explain to you what BookBub is or what, you know, what pricing. And, you know, we can have conversations where we both completely understand what's going on.
Yes.
Which makes it much easier.
Yes. Oh, definitely. And that's that's not insignificant. I think it's hard to learn in a co-writing situation.
Yes.
I just in many ways, not only on the creative side but on the marketing side, I think it's a steep learning curve. This whole business is a steep learning curve, and until you can kind of establish what your objectives are, what your goals are, what you want to get out of this career. Until you know that for yourself, it's really hard to then line that up with somebody else.
Mm. I did have a question about, again, on the type of people. I'm the first woman that you've co-written with.
Yes.
Obviously we're friends, you know, lay it on the line. Do you think that, how has it been different? And is that because I'm a woman that it's different, or because of my character? What have you noticed anything around that?
I'm thinking about my words in case my wife watches this. And I'm sure you have a nice female audience as well, but there are definitely differences in men and women. I think we can all agree on that.
Yes, let's agree that.
Okay. So in that context, yes, it's definitely different. And I think if you co-wrote with another woman, then you would feel the difference between what you and I did. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's perfectly natural. And I think women tend to be, in general, more detail-oriented. I think they tend to break things into smaller pieces. And that's what I've felt. So, the way that manifests between us is, I think you had, you were much more descriptive and you were much more detailed in sort of setting scene and location and mood. And I learned from that. Like that was good for me to kind of see, like, oh, I see how you sort of unrolled that and how you led the reader into the scene. There are differences. There are going to be differences. But I go into every collaboration, whether it's a man or woman, and I'm looking like, what am I going to learn? Like, I want to be a better writer, and I want to be the best I can be. And most of the times, that comes from working closely with someone else.
Mm. Yeah, and I feel that there are differences too. But what I don't know is whether that's because you're a man or just because the type of writer you are or how I am. So yeah, and I do write setting, and I do write. You know, that is a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the book, the landscape of New Zealand is important to the plot. So that was really interesting. But I found that your writing was I would say like harder, like a harder yeah. edge to it. And like we had, you know, some characters that you were definitely better to write mm-hmm. that, you know, I specifically kind of gave you those scenes because I thought that you could do a better job, which is kind of awesome. So I think that it really works. And I would be interested in writing with another woman and with another guy just to see what difference does gender make, you know, does it? Because James Patterson writes with women and men.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to me. And he writes a specific series for women that he does write with a woman. So it, you know, the Women's Detective Club or something. Now mm-hmm. I read a lot of, you know, books by both genders. So it's kind of unknown. But most horror writers, I mean, a lot of horror writers are men, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I think that's fair observation. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about the practicalities. So what should be put in place legally, contractually, before you start? And let's start with that. What do you need to do before you start writing and what decisions do you need to make?
This is not legal advice.
No, we are not lawyers.
We are not lawyers, so let's get that out of the way. I have a pretty boilerplate template that I use for most collaborations, and I have not done any collaboration that hasn't been 50-50 split, both on expenses and on income and royalties. So I think it's a pretty straightforward thing. In fact, if I can, for show notes, I can even put, you know, a PDF or something up if people want to see sort of a generalized agreement that they're free to use or tweak. But yeah, when you go 50-50, I just think it's important to have some written agreement. And, you know, whatever that happens to be, however you want to divvy it up, having something written in place is just the best practice. Mm-hmm. And in most of, you know, all the collaborations I've done, it's been 50-50, and it's also 50-50 on anything beyond the novel. And I think that's an important distinction to make as well, because I like to plan for success rather than failure. And
yes.
So, you know, like, if you have a movie studio or some medium that hasn't even been invented yet mm-hmm. and 10 years down the road is interested in Risen Gods, mm-hmm. You know, you need to be really clear on that. So I think just sort of stating that it's 50-50 forever on everything and anything that comes of it,
yeah.
pretty much covered.
but also that, you know, that you both go 50-50 in terms of effort and, you know, and doing the work and doing the marketing and, you know, that kind of implication as well. And the discussion of who will do who takes the lead on the story idea. And I mean, we've kept in contact. And like we said, this is the first time we've actually spoken for
yeah.
ages, but we have everything in writing in a Google Doc folder that we share between each other, and that the signed contract, we didn't mm-hmm. go through a lawyer. We should make that clear. We didn't go
right.
through an official. We did this between us. We both signed it, and mm-hmm. as far as we're both concerned, that is legally binding, and
yes.
that's, you know, the agreement between us. And I feel happy with that. Like, I don't feel the need mm-hmm. to go pay a lawyer $2,000, $5,000 or whatever to make our document into something, whatever. You know what I mean? So I think that's
right.
important. Like I did mention trust issues earlier around the creation side, but I mm-hmm. certainly think that it's very important to have some kind of trust with the person in a legal and financial sense, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, that's hard to figure out too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a patient person. I tend to rush into things, but I feel like I have a pretty strong gut sense. I have a pretty good instinct. Not always. I mean, I've been wrong about people, and I've been burned, and we all have. But I think having some type of relationship with someone before you enter into any type of legal agreement or co-working space is probably just a good idea. It's not required, but you know, I think of all the co-authored projects that have gone to publication or created something, and those all came from established relationships. Like mm-hmm. you and I have been talking for years. Glenn James and I have been talking for years. It's a certain unquantifiable human element, and that trust comes, I think, through a real relationship. So I think it's hard to manufacture that just for a project.
And then the other decisions we did were things like who would publish the book, who would pay the bills up front, who would... we were always going to share the first draft, but then we kind of developed into the, you know, and I then pretty much forced the editing process. But I mean, that's been really interesting. Well, we'll come back to editing. I know I'm trying to go in order. But the decision, like one thing again, and whether it's graciously or you were happy not to do it, is that I'm doing the publishing, which means that the money goes into my bank account, which means you have to trust me to pay you. So how, I mean, you've done it both ways. Is this the first time you've done it this way, or do you normally take that? How does that work for you?
I've normally done that because other people don't want to, because it's hard.
Really?
Yeah. So every month it's both a blessing and a curse. Like every month I get royalty checks from Amazon is awesome. And at the same time I groan because like now I've got to break out, you know, all the royalty disbursement, and that one damn book's got 10 authors, so I gotta, you know, gotta work that out. And I've got all the box sets, and some people are in multiple box sets, and, you know, it's not easy. It takes time. You have to be organized, and you have to be on top of that. And so a lot of people don't want to be bothered with it, and I totally get it. So in this circumstance, when you were like, yeah, you know, I'm totally fine publishing under my account, it was a bit of a relief for me, honestly, because I'm usually the person that takes that on, and I would have been willing to do it again. I mean, I've done it so many times now. I have a system in place. I would just plug this into that. So not having to do that, I think, is kind of nice. But again, yeah, I mean, I trust you. You could certainly skip town with
skip
all of
town
our royalties,
with all our money.
Right? Like, I don't know. I'm not too worried about it. Maybe I should be.
I think the point is that you have to discuss this, because at the moment there is no platform that will disperse funds. Unlike, you know, we need an ACX kind of equivalent so that we can do more collaborations. And I mean, I've thought about this a number of times, like inventing that, because you could just take a cut from it and you would do really well. But it needs an automated disbursement system. So like ACX, two or more creators can come together, do a contract, and then it's automatically split. So if anyone's a software developer, like that is, this is only going to get bigger, isn't it? This collaboration,
I agree,
co-writing thing, it's only going to get bigger. So I think that is a gap in the market. And as you said, all the box sets I've been in, somebody has to run it. Somebody has to do all of that. And it's a nightmare. So that was something else we had to agree up front. Was there anything else? Oh, the dates. You know, I pretty much, we both said we wanted to have something out by Christmas. And I know I moved the date once, and then, you know, I committed to a date, and we started on that morning, didn't we? And I think we finished a week earlier, I think, than we thought we would. But then the editing dates we've put into place later. So you definitely have to agree the dates in advance as well. Anything else that you should do before you start working with somebody? Oh, I guess the communication as well.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful to agree on both the frequency and the method. So as you mentioned, you know, we did not Skype at all during the process, but we were pretty much in daily communication. And one little piece that kind of crosses both the technical and sort of the writing process piece, and this is something that Glenn showed me, is keeping a separate document, and we did this, a separate document in the Google Drive, which is almost like a writing diary. So when we finished our piece for the day, we would then go and put something there. And sometimes it was, oh, okay, I'm done, it's over to you. And other times it was, wow, we really have to think about this. But having that sort of side stream conversation going asynchronously on a daily basis, I feel like that's really important. So whatever the method is, you're right. You should agree upon what the frequency is and what the method of communication is, because you have to have something going back and forth when you're in it.
Yeah, and what I think what was good about that document as well is, you know, it, we were putting, well, I was definitely putting emotional reaction into it as well, which you had less of, I think, because you've done this before. But I remember, like, the first morning, I was like, I was the first writer, and then I suddenly realised that you were going to read my first draft. And that note the first morning was, oh my goodness, you're just, you know, I feel really stilted that, because this, of course, I mean, I'm sure people listening, I mean, nobody's ever read my first draft before. I mean, you know, you talk about the whole, the spouse thing, you know, this, nobody reads it. It's a private thing, you know. And then it was, I've just written this and now you're going to read it. And it was a very frightening thing. And having that notes document there meant, and I didn't want to talk about it. You know, like we said, we're introverts. We don't want to talk, actually. We want to write. So writing down, I'm feeling this way. And, you know, you came back with, that's normal, right? You know, yeah. Tell me about that. I mean, how do you feel with people reading your first draft?
I don't think about it anymore. I did. I felt the same way as you. Although this is one of the first times I think that I did a lot of first drafting. So I guess in a way, it was somewhat new to me, but sort of knowing where the project would end up, I wasn't too worried about it. And Glenn and I guess, you know, he said early on, he's like, listen, dude, this is a rough draft. Like, you know what? Like, just don't, you know, let it go. Just let your creative mind go with it. And so that's sort of what I brought to this. And I'll be honest with you. I was a little bit worried about you in the first couple of days because I could feel the anxiety. I could feel you sort of not being sure, like almost that oh shit moment, like what did I get myself into, kind of thing. And so I just tried my best to kind of reassure you, like yeah, what you're feeling is pretty natural. It's pretty normal. Writing even having a finished product that's been edited and proofread and published, you're still really vulnerable. I mean, you're putting your soul out there, and people can be brutal and people can react to it in a not so great way. So to kind of share that in the process with somebody else, yeah, you're really vulnerable and it's hard. So kudos to you for sticking with it and not being scared off.
I'm glad you said that. It was hard. And I mean, we're going to take some of our diary and use it in the book. So if people are interested in the co-writing.
Just your parts.
Just my
just
part.
Not mine.
No, we're going to take some of the entries and we're going to include them in the book so that people can see the. And we didn't know we were going to do this, right? We didn't write the diary with any thought that we would be writing a co-writing book. But then we just thought, why don't we do this? Because so far, I mean, what's funny is we haven't press published yet, but I'm pretty sure this is going live because we have a cover. We have a book going to the editor tomorrow. So it's all kind of crazy. But okay, what else? So then I've got who comes up with the story and how does the outlining work? I think we've kind of covered that, haven't we? It really depends on the situation.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and how we did that again, we had the Google Drive. I did the two-page outline. You went in and did comments, and then we kept the running notes as we found more stuff and, you know, put new scenes into the notes. So that was pretty much what we did. And as I said, I've learned that I should do better outlining. But then let's... I guess how does the actual writing work? How did we manage the communication? Was there anything more apart from our notes thing?
Well, I think I had when I saw the incredible stuff you did with Scrivener, and I had I had Inspector envy because you had that Inspector window kind of jammed with so much cool stuff, and I was like, oh man, you
I'll
are so good at
screen
that.
Print. I'm going to put a screen print in the show notes
because yeah, you should. It was really impressive, and I've been using Scrivener for years, and I hadn't thought about using it in that way.
You didn't
and
even
I
know about snapshots.
No. Calling me out. All right.
Yeah. So anyway, the inspector.
Yeah, but like, and so we did use Google Docs, and Google Docs worked fine. It was what allowed us to collaborate in real time, and something that Zach Bohannon pointed out to me that I've started doing now with Glenn is because I have Google Drive on my phone. If I'm in the supermarket or in the line at the post office, I can kind of flip through the docs and kind of set the stage mentally for when I'm going to write next. Just when I have my phone. Mm. However, after seeing what you did with Scrivener, and I think I mentioned this to you at one point in one email, I would be really up for sort of digging deep technically and figuring out how to set up Scrivener in some type of shared cloud-based drive so that we could write in that. And I know it's not written to be used that way, but I know other people do it, and I'm sure we could figure it out. But from a technical standpoint, and that does bleed into craft and process. I love Scrivener. That's all I used to write my first draft. So, doing it again probably would be worth looking into Scrivener as that first draft tool.
Yeah, and I think the SPP guys, Sean and Johnny, use Scrivener. I don't know about Sean and Dave, but you just need to put it in Dropbox and make sure, as we did when we did use Scrivener, is closing it, zipping it, sending it, and it just becomes a little bit of a step in between.
Yeah.
But what we didn't mention is what we were doing was just creating a new Google Doc every day, each of us. We were creating that, I was writing in Scrivener, then pasting it into Google Docs. And then, as you showed me, little trick for new players, if the other person's documents don't appear, press the refresh button. I was like, this isn't working. He's not doing any work. And then you're like, no, press the refresh button. And there it was. And we also had a word count document.
Yes.
So we would enter our word count in there every day. And we started off in order, like chapter one, chapter two, and then we just gave up and it ended up just being the date because it just wasn't in order at all. But yep. I guess, and then we put any other things in the shared folder, didn't we? So the cover design, for example, that we started. I guess we should talk about the title. Like, again, the title was something that I came up with and you were pretty happy with, right? There wasn't anything that you... Generally, you've been really good and very, just nice about everything. Is that because we just think the same?
I think when I was younger, I tended to overthink a lot of stuff and I do overanalyze and... Even things, and I think introverts do this a lot too. Like someone says something to you, and then you're just stewing on it for days. Like, what did they mean? And I'm trying to get better about not doing that and practice to kind of go with your gut. And instinctually, I think we were aligned, and that's why I didn't feel there was no point in the project where I felt like I really have to push back on this because I don't feel like this is the right way to go. And even though it's your story, I know if I had done that, you would have certainly listened to me. You may not have agreed, but you would have entertained the idea. But I honestly didn't feel like there was any point where I had to do that. So I think the hardest decision, it was the first three or four cover designs that we got. Yeah, that was the biggest challenge, I think, for me in sort of... Sometimes too many choices for me is not good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes two is better than eight. So I think, looking at those different covers, it was hard. And I think that's where I sort of, again, I relied on you to kind of take the lead on that, knowing that it was a story you had in your head for a long time. But there was one point in the writing where I was in a particular scene and I just got stuck and I couldn't get out of it. And I remember writing to you at one point and saying, like, I don't know where to go with the scene or this, whatever. I forget what the situation was. But other than that, there was no point in the collaboration where I felt like this is really off the track or this is really not what I want it to be. And really the biggest struggle was the covers, and I think that would have been true. That's true for me on all my covers.
It's a difficult one.
It is. It's really hard.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, that was the kayak scene, I think. And you said, I don't kayak. Like, why do you want a kayaking scene? Like, what are you doing? And I wrote that. And then I got stuck. And I was just like, I'm so bored with this bit. I just don't even know what to do. So then I just gave it to you. So I think that's what's good as well, is if there is... if you're, especially because what we did, or what we should also say, is that we have two main characters.
Yes.
So that made it easy in terms of that A, B, you were writing. And I did say to you, I want to write the male character. And you said, no, I'm writing it. So you wrote Ben and I wrote Lucy mainly. Mm-hmm. But then we also ended up both writing scenes, different scenes from their point of view. So I took over some of Ben's and you took over some of Lucy. So we both ended up doing a bit of both. But it will be really interesting if people can tell. Like, certainly I think my editor will be able to tell what I wrote and what you wrote.
Yes.
But it'd be interesting to see if other people can tell. Have you found that in any of your other collaborations? Like, is it noticeable?
Well, in the Black Fang Betrayal, after we had our initial promotional run, where we published the book without the author's names on the chapters, and we had sort of this contest to see if you could guess who it was. And that lasted about a month or so, and then I uploaded the new version that had the author's name attached to each chapter. Mm. So for that one, it was clearly delineated that, you know, this was someone else. And I think it was also pretty clearly indicated that I was the person who wrote the beginning and the end. Mm. And then with Shadow Witch, Dan did the whole first draft, and then I came through and did all revisions. So we didn't really have that ABAB kind of thing going. So I guess I don't know yet. Yeah. This will be the first collaboration that I co-first drafted. So
yeah, okay. Although we should say that we both did an edit of our own chapters, but now I'm doing an edit of the whole thing, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of smoothing over some of it, which will be interesting. And you have very kindly given me kind of carte blanche.
Yes. Well, you have to have someone at the end of the production line. We shared a lot and we co-wrote and stuff, but I really do think like there has to be one person that has like the final, like, okay, it's done. Mm. Otherwise, you're just kind of chasing your tail. You're going in circles. So, of course, it made sense for that to be you in this case. And I trust you with it. And I know it's going to be great. And I think that you'll then put my writing through your own filter and it will smooth it over. I think it'll be much, much more integrated than it would have been if we tried just completely writing separately, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm happier with that as well. Mm-hmm. But that's my feeling. It's like, you know, and this is back to the author brand thing. So there is something, I haven't told you this yet. This is the first time, kind of not live, but so the F word, right, which we can't say on the Clean podcast. You're pretty liberal with the old F word. I made a decision about 5 years ago. Like, my readers are happy with, you know, burning nuns alive, you know, killing, ritually murdering children, ritual sex in tombs, all the various things that I end up kind of killing people with. But my readers don't like the F word. So I know. So when I made this decision about 5 years ago, I was like, okay, well then. And also, I think my upbringing, my mum was an English teacher, and she used to say using the F word means you don't have any other language and it's lazy. And I'm not saying that for you. I'm just saying that. So what's really funny in the book is I'm reading it going, I know that character would say that, but I can't have that in the book. So now I've just told you this. What is your reaction?
I'm out. No, it's off.
It's all over.
No, I don't think for me, it's another word. I don't have any, I don't know. This is, yeah, I don't have any sort of, hang up with it. I don't necessarily walk around in my day to day life just dropping F bombs in random sentences, but, I've always felt in my writing that if the character would say it, then I say it. And, but at the same time, I think there are other ways of achieving the same effect. So you're
okay that I'm editing them all out?
So I am okay as long as you don't substitute it with like
gosh
fudge.
Damn.
Yeah. You know, like I think, if you'd have to change the whole content or change the whole lot. Like I'm totally fine with that. I think it's trying to substitute one word for it comes off as really kind of corny and cheesy. So.
Yeah, no, it's not happening like that. It's just changing. But it was interesting because that was something that, for my brand, that's something important.
Yeah.
It's just something I maintained. And I know that some of my readers would read it and be jolted out of the story.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, your readers wouldn't be. They probably wouldn't even notice it. And I don't notice it as a reader, but it's an interesting, these things that you end up kind of doing. And also the cover, just talking back about the cover, what I like about the cover is that it has managed to fit with both of our covers, both of the covers that we've had individually. I think yes. It works nicely between us. It uses the red that you use often on your books. It uses the font that I have on my books. The colors work with both of our brands. So what's interesting is kind of the weaving together in this design and editing process is difficult.
Yeah.
It is really hard. And the consistent voice, smoothing process, I am finding the editing difficult, and especially as a should I leave that in because you care about that bit, or should I cut it out because it doesn't add to the story, you know, that kind of thing. And so that's actually been really hard, but at this point, you know, when you get to this point, you're just like, oh, whatever, I'm just gonna
What he thinks, I just want to get this done.
Yeah, I just want to get it done now. I just want to get it out. It's better to have a happy finish, because of course the other thing is we're doing the full process. So we both did the first draft. I did the first edit, put, you know, mashed it all together and put it all in a timeline. You did the second edit. It's come back to me for a third edit. It's then going to Jen, professional editor, and she often does two passes, so a story edit and a line edit. It will come back to me and maybe you for rewrites, we'll see. And then it will go to beta readers. We have a Māori specialist, Aaron in New Zealand, and also we have Jonathan, who is a volcanologist. So we have two beta readers, and then we have a proofread. And we want to get all of that done in the next, 4 weeks.
Sure, why not?
But you said that I pushed you on editing. So tell me about that.
Yeah, I think my normal process and project, it doesn't have to be my normal process anymore. I kind of took the Stephen King approach from On Writing, and he talks about writing a draft and like setting it aside for 3 months. And I could never wait 3 months, but I would definitely set it aside, and probably now it's more like 5 or 6 revisions, but when I first started out, I would go 6, 7, 8, even 9 revisions. And when I say a revision, I would mean printing out the book, on sitting down with a red pen and going through the whole thing, taking it back to the computer, making my changes, printing it out, doing it again. And between each one of those, I would let it sit. I would write some short stories, I'd work on a different project, and I would try not to come back to it for a couple weeks. And what that allowed me to do is to kind of percolate on the story and think about what I wanted to do in the next round of revisions. So it didn't hit me until you sent them over, and I kind of had that like, oh shit moment again, where I was like, well, how am I going to do this?
In basically, I gave you 8 days.
Yeah, I think it was something like that, right? So it was, one second here. It's calling for me to continue recording. Hold on.
Oh yeah. It's been an hour. So,
all right, there we go. So yeah, I got the edit, and then that's when I had that moment where I was like, oh yeah, I got to turn this around in like a week. And I think I wrote to you. I'm like, yeah, I'm basically condensing everything that takes me 3 months into 7 days. And I was like, well, all right, this is what it's going to take. And honestly, I kind of procrastinated a little bit. I didn't touch it until Friday. I tried. A couple times I sat down and I looked at the first chapter, and there was so much I had to do on the first chapter that I wrote. And legitimate stuff. Like, I'm not saying like, oh, she's totally wrong. Like, I agreed with everything you said. But I knew like what was waiting for me. And so I procrastinated. And Friday I was like, okay, I cannot let this sit anymore. And then once I got into it, I got really into it. And then I spent pretty much the entire weekend, like, I don't know, at least 14 plus hours working on it. And that was good. And I felt really great that I was able to do that, because it was something I couldn't do before, but I was honestly not prepared for it.
Yeah, which is cool. And I think, you know, for me now, I write, as I said to you, I take longer to write the words, but my first draft in the last couple of books I've written, my first draft has been pretty good. Like, yeah. I've actually, you know, sometimes the version, you know, I haven't done a rewrite. Like, for me, Deviance, I was really happy with that book. You know, it came, and One Day in New York as well, came really, really smoothly, almost first draft, which is really exciting because that's what Dean Wesley Smith says, right? That you should, you know, you shouldn't have to do all this. And I think the more you internalize story, the easier it becomes. But you were, I mean, and the reason the first draft, the first chapter was so hard is you still didn't have a handle on the story. It was in my head. And that's what I mean about one of the mistakes was if I had outlined better, then you wouldn't have had such a hard time. And then you wouldn't have had to rewrite that first chapter, especially so much because you would have known more. So that to me, it's a lesson.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I generally struggle with the beginning of any book. I don't struggle writing it in the first draft. I struggle with what to do with it when I'm done. Because as you said, even if I kind of map things out or plan things out, I go back and I read the whole thing and I'm like, that beginning doesn't, you know, it doesn't quite fit. Or I was still sort of stumbling around trying to figure out what to do. So I think that was definitely the case here, especially because, as you said, the story wasn't in my head, it was in yours. And so those first couple chapters with Ben, like, I didn't really know who the character was or like how to play him, you know. So I knew that was coming. And I think even intellectually, I knew that the editing, I was not going to have 8 weeks to do the editing, but it didn't hit me as a reality until you sent me that Scrivener file.
And then you went, oh no, because I did put a whole load of notes in and highlighted things, you know. And so it was a really, I've learned a lot from it, you know, from doing the process. So So I guess we've said a few things, but in terms of what we would do differently next time, if we do a next time, we still haven't officially agreed that. But, you know, at the moment, I'll say I'm happy to, you know, to potentially do something else. Are you?
Of course.
Yeah, we're tied to each other now, like financially. So.
Yeah, we can't get away from each other
now. That is true. But, you know, well, one thing is we're still friends.
Yeah, yeah. That's true, and that's not always true.
Okay, well, tell us about the failures, when things go wrong. You don't have to mention any names, but
yeah, I wouldn't do that. But yeah, what I consider a failure is not getting to market, and that's a failure of writers in general.
Yes, we
all meet people who, you know, they want to give you this. I got this great idea. I'm going to give it to you. I'm like, thanks, but it's like giving me a, you know, a fruit basket at Christmas or something. Like, you know, I have a million ideas a day. It's not the idea generation. It's the implementation. It's the execution of that story that's hard. So the collaborations I consider failures are ones where we didn't get to market. And it's weird. Like, it depends. I'm still friends with one person, but like, we started something and this is what happens more often than not. I will not give up. Like, I'm pretty gritty in most counts. Like, I know this is a tangent, but even like something like Facebook advertising, like, I will just keep trying until something works. I just don't give up. And I kind of take that approach in my art. Sometimes I just fight through it. Stephen Pressfield, you know, I just fight through it. But not everyone has that sort of grit, and other people bring other strengths and characteristics to the table. And so the people who don't have that same level of grit, what tends to happen is they kind of fall away, or the project just kind of dissolves. There isn't like a formal, like, that's it, I quit, or you suck, I'm out. It just kind of fades. And so most of the failures in collaborations have been that. And I can honestly say that they don't fade from my side because I'm too gritty to give up on it. So if someone wants to collaborate with me and it's not working, they're basically going to have to tell me to kiss off if they want it to end, because I won't give up on it. Like, I'll just say, okay, how about we take this angle? So in those failed collaborations, I just kind of let them go. I feel like, okay, if this person really wanted to make this happen, they wouldn't let it slide. And if it does slide, then it wasn't meant to be. And I don't push it and I don't endanger it. And so that's more often than not, that's what happens.
And is that because putting from your perspective, did you choose the wrong person? Did you get the personality wrong? Or was there something about the writing that just didn't gel? Like, what are the lessons learned from failures?
Hard to say. It's hard to tell because we never really know what's going on in someone else's head, and I try and be really sympathetic about that. Like I had one collaboration that started and then it really kind of crashed and burned, and I felt terrible about it. And I didn't feel terrible about it because the collaboration didn't happen. I felt terrible about it because I had inadvertently hurt someone, and I didn't mean that. And it sort of happened that way, and I can't change it. And I apologized, and it was accepted, and it's okay, and it's done. But I think I found out later through this person that he was dealing with some other stuff that was pretty heavy and personal, and I didn't know that. And if I had known that, I may have even said like, hey, why don't we hold off on this? You know, get yourself where you need to be, and then come back. But you just don't know that. So. If you know someone, and I think it goes back to what we talked about having a relationship with people before you start creating art together. I think if you know someone really well, it lessens the chance of that happening. It doesn't eliminate the risk, but it definitely makes it more likely you'll succeed.
Yeah, and also that communication, like the notes thing, you know, that's so important. Like you said, you don't know what's going on in someone else's head unless they tell you. Right. And, you know, the day I didn't write, I think I was really sick, like I had a head cold or something, and it was the Friday, and I wrote on the Thursday and I felt crap, and on the Friday I just died, and you know, I said I can't write today because I can't even, like, I'm not even live, and then I was back on it on the Monday. But if I hadn't have told you that and just not written, you would have thought, oh, she's just being lazy.
I could have, yeah. I could have been led to that. I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, so you just, I mean, I think the honesty and the notes thing were great, you know, and we're writers at the end of the day, so I think that was fine. We did have a Skype call scheduled, but we didn't do it. It didn't seem necessary. But as per a marriage, you know, for me, the communication before the problem gets too big is the point. And then like you said, I had a few issues in the first few days. They were more about me, not about you. And at that point, if I'd have pulled out, you know, I could have said to you, I'm pulling out, that would have been fine. But I haven't felt like doing that. Yeah. It just feels quite normal. But some of the other emotional, psychological issues that come up. So for me, I've written down fear of judgment. So I've talked about fear of judgment around you judging my first draft. So we've talked around that. Comparisonitis. It's very hard not to compare your writing to somebody else when you're doing co-writing. So comparisonitis, these are my issues, then you can do your issues. Egomania and control freakery, which again, I've mentioned, the fact that I'm like, oh, am I being too controlling? Am I forcing my point of view or my story onto you? You know, am I being too in control for a collaboration? So those are my things: fear of judgment, comparisonitis, and egomania or control freakery. All right, do you recognize any of those?
I think I had my own set of issues. I think a lot of my issues center around sort of self-worth and something I've dealt with my whole life. And I guess it's comparisonitis in a way. It's like feeling like you don't measure up or you're not good enough. And I think that's an easy place to go, especially in this industry where you're evaluated so publicly and so often. I mean, can you imagine like if you worked in an office and there was a website where people could go and like leave reviews about how you did that day.
And then your like, money was based on it.
Yeah. Like people could one star you for your job at the bank or whatever. Like, I mean that, you know, that's kind of silly, but like, I think that gets down to this idea of comparisonitis and thinking like, okay, you know, do I measure up? Do I have the chops? Do I have the ability to do this? And, you know, it's really, I think it's more about perseverance than anything else. I think perseverance really trumps talent in many cases. And I think if you stay at something long enough and you're willing to Not work hard, but work smart. I think if you are really deliberate about what you do, you can really improve and you can really become better. And so I would be lying if I said I didn't have any of those issues. I mean, you're Joanna Penn. And like
you're
you giggle. Yeah, but you giggle. But like, you know, there's, you know, you're a very prolific and well-respected author, not only in the indie community, but in general. And so, yeah, there's, you know, I had issues around like, you know, can I do this? I did, you know, but I think having those issues and then moving through them is different than being paralyzed by them and stopping. And neither of us did that. So that's why we're here today.
Yeah. And I'm really happy with that. Okay. So I think, you know, we're wrapping up now and, you know, so I guess rounding up, what are some of the other things that you might like to share with other people about co-writing?
I think for me, and especially in this project with you, it was fun. And I think we often lose sight of that as writers, whether it's ourselves or like, why are we doing this in the first place?
Yeah.
Because we enjoy it, you know? And I think there was something really fun about, like, I couldn't wait to get up and see what you wrote. And then I couldn't wait to see what you thought of what I wrote. And I was so excited by seeing the word count grow. Like, we don't need a spreadsheet with word count. It's more of a psychological thing. And as that number started going up, like, I was getting excited. And, you know, I'm excited now as we're finalizing our decisions on the map. And I'm excited about the cover. And all of this is just a lot of fun. And I think it's, you know, you can, it's a different kind of fun than doing it by yourself.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that kind of addiction of that first draft phase, I've never felt that before because I normally really struggle with first draft. So it was, you know, and there were days I came home and my husband, I also think the book is fun. I mean, the book itself is.
Yeah, it is.
And the reason we're moving fast on it, it's very fast paced. It is a, you know, it's a journey. It's, you know, it's a kind of the end of the world and, you know, almost apocalyptic, almost pre-apocalyptic, almost. And the book is fun itself. And I was enjoying writing the scenes, you know, the monsters. And it's a book I've wanted to do, but it felt appropriate to do it with you. So it was it was kind of more fun in that way. So I do think that it's important. I mean, we didn't mention this earlier, but it's important to not co-write in the world that you own as an individual. Because the copyright extends to the world as well. So both, basically we've agreed that we both own that world. Now, individually, we could both write in that world. But for example, you can't co-write with somebody else with those characters unless I get a cut and vice versa. And so that, I think that's really important, is that, you know, you didn't write in the Arcane world. You know, I didn't write in your thingy realm, Preta's realm, you know, whatever, you know, it didn't write the portal Arcane stuff, you know, although mine's Arcane and yours is Arcane.
Mine with a C, you with a K, right?
Yeah. But, you know, we have the same brain. But I think that's important too. This seems to be working out really well. Maybe we'll do a roundup once we're, you know, out. And we'll be doing all the marketing stuff that we usually do and sharing it all. But if it hadn't have been fun, I think it would have been really difficult. Like, you have enough to deal with when you're writing a book on your own. And if there's trouble with the other person, that would be a problem, I think.
Yeah, and really, I mean, I have to hand it to you. It is a great story. I think readers are really going to love it. It's something, it's unique and it's fun and it's fast paced and it's exciting. And I think for me, that was a big part of it. Like, I wanted to get to the end too, because I was really excited about it and all the layers that are added to it. And it's got all the stuff in a story that I love, both the good and the bad. Like, you know, it's got the strong characters, but it's also got this massive destructive element that you have to deal with. And it was a really fun story. And I think that so it was fun doing it with you in creating this, but it was, and the story itself was fun. And so I think I couldn't wait to get up every morning and get into the Google Drive.
And yeah, I wouldn't do it with like a literary emotional novel.
No. Kind of weird, yeah.
Neither of us do that anyway. So I think probably we can sum it all up as co-writing with the appropriate person is a good thing.
Yes. Absolutely. Totally agree.
There you go. That can be the title of the podcast. okay. So just wrapping up, you know, where can people find you and your books? And oh, tell us about your podcast and your YouTube and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'll make it easy. jthorn.net is the portal that gets you into everything that I do. Everything funnels through that. I have a show called Dark Arts Theater, which is designed for fans of horror and heavy metal. And it's everything from music videos to interviews to all kinds of short stories, audible short stories. And then Zach Bohannon and I just relaunched the Horror Writers Podcast. And that's been dormant for about 10 months. And Zach came to me and said he thought we should revive it. And so we've kind of taken a little different spin. And we're really targeting sort of fans of horror as opposed to doing writing stuff. Mm. So that just came back up 2 weeks ago, I think. We've got a bunch of episodes stacked for that. So that's kind of what I got going on.
That is fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Jay. And not just for today, but for the last couple of months as well.
It's been great.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.